My name is Debo Powers. Today is June 19th, 2015. I'm interviewing for the first time Joe Lang. This interview is taking place at 1400 North Fork Road, Polebridge, Montana. This interview is sponsored by the North Fork Landowners Association and is part of the North Fork History Project. So, Joe, tell us a little bit about your early background, where you were born, where you grew up.
I was born way, way, way years ago, 1932, in rural northeast North Carolina. It was a farming area, but when I was fourth grade, we moved to Florida, and I was really raised in Dade City, Florida. I remained there until, one year after I graduated from high school. Mm-hmm. I decided, well, nothing to do around here. I didn't want to go to college, probably couldn't even afford to go to college, so I enlisted in the Air Force. Mm-hmm. And I wound up making it my career. I didn't do any shooting, I didn't do any fighting. I was the typist. And I wound up at Offutt Air Force Base in Omaha, Nebraska twice. And it was during our second tour at Offutt that somehow, I don't know, I remember now how we discovered or heard about Glacier National Park. So we started coming up here on our summer vacations, going into the park, mostly staying over on the eastern side because that's the best side for camping, the hiking and so forth. And every summer we would come up for our 2 weeks here. And how we found out the North Fork was, every tourist wants to see a bear.
Of course.
And that's for us. We were wanting to see bears. In fact, good example, we were camping in the eastern side here. Western side. But I don't remember the name of the little campground. Where you go up so far, and it's over on the right. Mm-hmm. This is the way my family was. There's a bridge across the little creek, closed, bear damage. And my kids and my crazy wife, oh good, let's go see the bears. And they stepped across and ran into a ranger over there. But they told us the place to go was the Camas Road. They said when the Camas Road was being upgraded and all, they made the mistake of seed and clover on each side, and bears love clover. And that was a ranger that told us that. And I think it was the first time we went up, we saw a bear. Mm-hmm. And we were always coming up to clover, coming up to Camas. Mm-hmm. And we would wind up at the end of Camas, and there is that dirty road you'd look at. Didn't know about it at the time, but the first time we were sitting there just debating, and I log truck came roaring down and the dust was flying everywhere, and I said to my wife, no way. So we turned around and came back, and we never did, on of our vacations up here, we never did go up the North Fork Road. Mm-hmm. But after four or five summers like that, we decided, gads, that would be a nice place to have a summer home. Because by then, I was retired from the Air Force. Mm-hmm. And we started, we contacted a realtor, and he sent us this real estate magazine for Flathead County. And we were looking through that. We had the Hungry Horse News we subscribed to. And was looking at Larry Wilson's column, too.
Right, of course.
You always had to do that. We saw a place in the Hungry Horse News for sale. We contacted the place. It was Monty Benson's home up here. Mm-hmm. And we wrote back and forth, and he's given us detailed information. He sent us 35, 40 pictures. I sent out questions to him with room after each question to respond. We wound up buying the place, and we never did see it before buying it. We were going to come up on, it was a holiday for in the spring, no, still in the tail end of the winter, and it was a break in the schools, and Joanne and I were going to make a quick dash up here to look at it before committing ourselves, but we had a snowstorm and couldn't make it. So we said, well, it looks so nice, and it's what we always thought about. So we bought it, sight unseen, and never regretted it. Never regretted it once. Joanne retired from the schools in 91, and that's when we were packing up, ready to come the day after school ended.
Mm-hmm. And when did you buy your property?
Beg your pardon?
What year did you buy your property?
We bought it, schools are out in June of 91. It was either late winter or early spring of that year. Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. And we started up, Maggie, who was in junior high school at the time, son Steve, who is with me now, and Joanne and myself. I was driving a U-Haul trailer, and they were following me in the motorhome we had at the time. And wound up here, had to go up the North Fork Road finally. And the Bensons had told us where to meet them, which was the father, Jack Benson's place, now Steve Berg's. And we stopped there, and Jack came out, we introduced ourselves, blah, 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 and all. Talked for a little bit, we had questions for him, and then he told us a funny story. He said, my boys thought they were going to pull a joke on you. I said, what's that? He says, well, they were going to take you up Trail Creek Road and show you a dilapidated house and say, that's what you bought. And Jack said, you better not do that because you don't know this guy. And I'm thankful that he didn't. I might have had a heart attack. And I was only about 44, 45 at the time. Uh-huh. And again, I wanted something to do. I told my wife, I said, again, I'm too young to totally stop. I've got to find something to do. Well, all of these summers have come in up and just spending the summers up. We got to know Becky the mail gal real well. She would stop on her way back down. She'd stop and have lunch with us. And she told me about a vacancy coming up at the customs building, Trail Creek, what is called Trail Creek. Mm-hmm. And I went over to introduce myself at Roosevelt to the area director. Told him I was retired Air Force. He said, oh, I had a tour in the Air Force too. So we had a little connection there. Uh-huh. We talked for about a half an hour, and then he gave me the forms to fill out. And, well, you had to go through they had to check you out and all that stuff. But I got the job.
Uh-huh. And what was your job? Just wait at the border?
There was only one inspector here. Mm-hmm. It was only open 1st of June through the end of October. Mm-hmm. We would we would open at 9 o'clock, and we'd close the gates at 5 o'clock. And I would say, well, when you first open up, June, the start of July, you'd be happy if you'd see 6-7 people a day. Mm-hmm. That's when I learned to play cribbage. You know, the Canadians love to play crib. I learned to play crib. And then I don't think we never peaked over 20 people. Mm-hmm. And that was seldom. The Canadian guy at that time was a retired RCMP. At that time, this place was just crawling all over with the animal study kids. Mm-hmm. It looked like every animal had a group that they were studying. And we got to be quite friendly with them because animals don't know any to go through. You have to go through the gate anytime. So we was special dealings with them. Uh-huh. And let's see, what else?
When you first started living up here, what was it like? Did you have water or?
No. When we first bought, and this was when we were just coming up summers, we have not be around, there was no water. We would have to go down to the Trail Creek Bridge and then parallel the road and back up. And you would carry I think it was about a 500-gallon drum on the back of your pickup truck. Mm-hmm. And the house here, no, not here, the house up there, it was plumbed, ready for water. But upstairs it had a great big giant, you've seen these big tanks that cattle have, that you pump it up there and then it's just gravity flow down.
Right, great.
And we had that for 2-3 years. We wanted our own well. Everybody wants their own well.
Yeah.
And even we went and tried and came up with 2 dry holes. And Jack Benson owned Ed Hager's place. In fact, well, Wayne built that. And we decided, the three of us, that we would go for a well together, bring a dowser, a witcher, and wherever she said to dig, we would dig, and then it belonged to all of us in thirds. And Steve Berg drew up our paperwork and all. And Wayne brought up a dowser, whatever. First she tried around here, couldn't find anything. Started going down to the side of our trail, nothing. Got in the middle house, nothing. The Hager's place now, that's where it went down on her. And that's where we drilled. I don't remember, it was well over 100 feet. And we were getting something like 20, 25 gallons. But with a community well and the way everything was built, you couldn't have a pressure system. That was impossible. So at least we didn't have to go to Trail Creek.
That's right.
All I would do is go down and start the pump, and Joanne would, the way she would tell me when the tank upstairs was full, she would go out on the front porch and start waving a towel, and I could see it, and I knew then to turn the pump off.
That's great.
People up the border, they had, let's see, the retired RCMP, he was a very nice guy. He was ideal to have up here with the retired RCMP criminal. He didn't know it at the time, but he had a heart attack while he was out here. He just recognized it as something was wrong. And he was in their quarters, their couch in the front room would look right down into the Norfolk Road in the States. And he would lay on that couch, eat an aspirin, and if he see a car coming, he would go out, probably halfway clear it, and go back and get on the couch. He was that way for 3 days, and it was when he went out for his relief, they discovered, and he never came back out then. The relationship between these two, I guess you could call it international relations at its lowest point.
At its lowest
two point? People,
two people.
Just two people. If I was doing something, hey, God, I need a nail, I'd run to Canada and get myself a nail. If he's inspecting someone and it didn't quite look right, or the way the vehicle looked and all, I'd just walk over. And just be there, and he'd do the same for me. So you had a little backup there.
Wasn't there a lot of people living at Moose City at the time?
Some of the animal study people were living in Moose City at the time. But when the owners would come in the summers for their whatever they do, they would have to move out. They were the people that would come in, the owners. Yeah, there was, I don't know who she was, but while here, it seemed like every morning she'd come over and bring me a breakfast plate, but I'd already eaten before leaving my house.
Do you have any exciting stories from the border?
One is, okay, you know the strict control of weapons in Canada. That's, they are very, very, very strict. a pickup truck with a beautiful canoe on the back, Kentucky plates, went into Canada. And of the quiz in and so forth, it came out, do you have a pistol? Yeah, a handgun. And the guy was a man and his wife. And no, I don't have anything like that. Well, Bill was checking around and he found some handgun bullets in the glove compartment. So he's really looking. And he found it. Mm-hmm. And it was one of these old-timey revolvers that the guy said he had been in his family for years. And he also told Bill, he says, just before leaving, I was giving my kids a lecture on how you should always tell the truth. But it didn't save him.
Yeah.
If you say, yes, you do, you just turned around.
Mm-hmm.
But if not, and they find it, and I don't know now, but at that time, the fine was $300 you pay on the spot, mm-hmm. plus you've lost the weapon.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So Bill, after he finished the processing, he got on the radio phone and told me, they're coming back. So once it stopped on my canopy, I had to go out, you know, and he told me what had happened and so forth. And he says, I don't have enough money to really enjoy it. In fact, he says, I don't have enough money to go home now to Canada, to Kentucky.
Uh-huh.
He says, I've got to go down to the valley and sell this canoe.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on over coffee, I told Bill that story. Joe, he says, I bet you could have gotten a good deal with that canoe. I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole. You take their gun, you take the money, and me, that's no way, no way. let's see, there was another one. Let's see. We'd opened, I said, at 9 o'clock. And, well, from our cabin, you know, where no word is from the border, I would have my breakfast, and I'd get up there about 8:30, and I'd open and put the flags up and go on the radio to Roosevelt, you know, we're here. I was driving up one morning, and there's a pickup truck waiting to go into Canada. He's pulling an RV trailer, and there's a dog in the back of the pickup truck. Which, you see it every now and then, something like that, they're waiting.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm outside raising the flags, and he gets out of his pickup truck, and he says, good morning. I says, good morning, you know. He says, I'm a secret agent. He says, I can't prove it, I don't have my ID, but he says, I'm a secret agent on a secret mission. I says, okay. And he kept repeating himself like that. Well, I got the flags up, and I went inside and got on. It was handsets between us and Canada. And at that time, it was the RCMP. And I said, you've got a kook coming over. He says, well, let me see what he's like. And he cleared him. No, he first couldn't clear him because he didn't have the proper vet shots on the dog.
Oh, uh-huh.
So he parked the trailer just on our side, went back down in the valley with his dog. The next morning, he was back, had the shot, so he and his trailer, they take off. At that time, the grizzly bear study, all the kids were located just on the other side of the border. And they kept about 2 days, or maybe 3 days, they were coming down and telling Ron, there's a trailer sitting on the side of the road up here. There's a dog chained to the rear end, and it's been there for 2 days or so, and nobody's been around. And they've been feeding and watering the dog.
Uh-huh.
Well, Ron gets concerned about what happened to the guy. He calls the RCMP. They're out checking. Can't find him.
Mm.
And I don't remember the time element now involved, but Ron was inside early one morning for the start a new day, and he looked up, and here is a guy with just his pickup truck and his dog waiting to come back in the States. And Ron goes, where in the hell have you been? I was captured. He says, I was captured, but he said, I escaped. He says, go get your gun. We'll go back and get him. Let him in. Ron says, I'll be damned if he's coming back in this country. When he finally, I don't remember the time element now. I think it was only the next day or the day afterwards. He wanted to go up and get his trailer, and Ron would let him in. So it was Lynn and Larry Wilson that went over and pulled his trailer down for him.
Uh-huh.
In fact, they knew who he was. He was a local somewhere down here. So you meet this. I never run into anybody that was, well, like the guns or drugs mm-hmm. or anything. I never. Mm-hmm. It was always families.
Yeah.
There was one car that would we close at 5, and he came down about 20 till 5. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things when you're instructed on the job, is watch out for people that's wanting to clear it just before change of shift,
mm-hmm.
because they're going to kind of halfway look you over and push you right through. Or it says early in the morning, but we opened at 9 o'clock, we didn't worry about that. He says they'll think, yo, I got to go back to my coffee, and they'll push you through. Mm-hmm. But this guy came about 20 to 5, and I'm checking him out, and I opened his trunk, and my God, it was like a drugstore in the trunk of that car. Bottles of wow. all sorts of stuff. And, well, we had the tester for doing the test to see if they're drugs. But I'm going to be here till midnight testing all of these. So I called Ron and come over here. And he had been years and years and years on drug enforcement in Canada, the RCMP.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, help me out here, Ron. And he'd taken, smell it. That's okay. That's okay. Where'd you get this? What's this for? And all. But he told me there's nothing there. That's the only time I really had a problem. And, I've got to tell you one more. Is this boring?
No, this is good.
After Ron and his heart attack, the main guy that came out and finally was the steady one, his name was Bill McSeveny. He was about 6'6", Scottish, red hair, red mustache. And it was single. A lot of times after we'd close, well, he'd have his dinner and we'd have our dinner, and then he'd get on, actually the gates closed, but he'd get on his motorcycle and come down and we'd watch a movie at my place. And we were watching a movie. It's getting dark, but you can still see things around. And we were really concentrating on a good movie, and somebody comes knocking on our door, the back door.
Hmm.
Yeah. Who in the world? Where'd they come from? So I go out, and it's a man, and turned out to be his son, on bicycles. And he says, do you have a telephone? I says, no. He says, I need a telephone to call down in the valley. I says, who are you? Where'd you come from? He says, I came from Canada. I said, man, you stopped at the wrong house. I said, Bill, come out here. It turned out to be they had driven from the east side into Canada, the Americans.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They took their bikes. Their father, son wanted a long bike ride, and they saw them this map coming this way. And the mother came down from the other side, and they were to meet in Glacier Park. So I called after questioning him and checking out his ID and all that stuff. I called Roosevelt and explained it to him. And they said, well, use your own judgment on what you want to do.
Yeah.
So, okay, is the guy telling the truth? He's got a kid with him. It looks right. And pretty soon my radio comes to life. It's the rangers down in the park. And he's telling me he's got a woman here looking for her husband and little boy. So I said, well, it's okay.
Yeah.
But I told him, hey, you know, I says, if you better run into somebody that say I wanted to, you interrupted my movie, I says, you could have been fined, heavily fined.
Yeah. So there weren't that many people that went across the border.
That's true. It's just so seldom, seldom, yeah.
And were you there until they closed the border?
I know you know about the big flood.
Well, tell me about the big flood, because that's...
Well, let's see. That is the year that I had stopped working the border, because I knew we were going back to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a guy from Roosevelt that came over to start that year. Was this 95, 96, the flood?
Mm-hmm.
So it was my year of not working. Mm-hmm. But I had a rain gauge out in my yard, and it would measure 10 inches. And that night, it rained, and it rained, and it rained. It was just pouring. After breakfast, I went and looked. That rain gauge had overflowed.
Wow. That doesn't happen up here very often.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And somebody, I don't remember now who it was, came by, and they said, hey, they want you to come on up to the border to see what's going on. And I guess just to show me. So then I took my video camera with me. And you know what it's like on our side. Mm-hmm. There's the canopy where you drive under. Mm-hmm. That was underwater.
Wow.
The water was all across the road. So far up, but not to the Canadian buildings. And then all over into the airport area and all. Mm-hmm. We were walking before where the water ends, over into Moose City.
Mm-hmm.
And you see where one building, there's the results of where it stood, had already gone down the river. And there's another one about to go. And I was recording that and watching it as it went down the river.
Oh.
There was a, I don't know if they're married or not, there's a boy and a girl that was on their way the night before the gates closed. They were on their way out going north, and they went so far, this is the day before, you know, and they couldn't get through because of the water, and they turned around, the Canadians, they spent the night with the Canadians there. I don't remember how many days now it took. Naturally, everything was closed.
Mm-hmm.
When it finally, you could go across, and Big Bill was the one on the other side then, and I went over to see him, and where, you know, by Joe Bush's place up there.
Joe Bush, yeah.
That's where the road had been cut from the river, the water and all. There was a partial bridge up until that time that used to be useful, but it was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see from the watermark where he had been at Joe Bush's quarters there. Wow. And the natural mud everywhere.
Yeah.
I have heard, and whether it's true or not, I don't know. I have heard that, and this is shortly after that, that the U.S. is ready to open the border anytime the Canadians open.
Oh, really?
But the Canadians have no reason.
Uh-huh.
Okay, the road's been washed out.
Uh-huh.
And the only reason would be like the first year we were here, when my God, it was 12 or 15 log trucks coming down a day. And that you don't see that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen in the paper where there's organizations up in Canada that, let's see, what's Glacier called in Canada?
Waterton.
Waterton.
Uh-huh.
That they want to expand Waterton West.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And if that happens, there's a reason to open the road.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that was the year they closed the border with the flood.
And it's never been opened since.
It's never been opened
since.
Yeah. Wow. It was nice when we could drive north across there and go to Fernie. I remember.
Yes. Back when it was open, you had locals here. They would drive up and have lunch at Joe's place.
Mm-hmm.
You had the tourists that would come up just to go across and get their picture taken and then come back. We went to Canada. the Sullivans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that Tom's place was there. That was Tom's place initially.
Right, yeah.
And what they treated him just like it was family.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the tape that I bought, you'll see that Sue was doing some of the interviewing. Becky would pick him up and bring him up to the border, and Joanne would be up there, and Sue would be up. And mainly Joanne and Sue priming him to get certain questions where he'd talk about and all. Uh-huh. Then, let's see, you'll see a Canadian in his uniform customs with a beard. That's not Ron. That's the guy, when Ron had his heart attack, he came out until they could come up with Bill starting uh-huh. out and all. Mm-hmm. But he seemed to know a lot about what Tom was talking about.
Uh-huh.
Let's see, anything else about the border? Oh, I had another crazy incident. A girl is coming up from the States on a bicycle. She looks to be in her late teens or so, and these black plastic garbage bags, one was tied to her handlebars, and she's going up into Canada, and Bill is talking to her, and comes back on the radio and says she's missing 60 cents of her dollar, and he says, I can't let her in.
Mm-hmm.
So when she came back, and I'm talking to her, you know, and I try to ask her, I said, what's your name? I don't have to tell you my name. I said, no, that's right, but I said, suppose somebody's looking for you, and I hear the name, but I don't know it's you. Why don't you tell me for that reason? No, I don't have to tell you. Where are you from? I don't have to tell you anything. So I get on the radio and call the sheriff's office.
Mm-hmm.
And I explain it to him. And he says, you consider her a threat? I says, I don't think so. He says, well, it's not against the law to be crazy. So she biked down into the river access across from the border there, and she was a long, long time. And I'm waiting for her to come back out. And again, would she jump in the river? So finally I walked down there, and she just sitting, leaning up to a tree, just watching the water. So I went. Finally she came out and started biking north.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
It's not against the law to be crazy.
We would have great parties with the animal study people.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes at our place, sometimes over into Canada. They enjoyed it because it was a good way of having a good meal. We enjoyed it because they could tell such great stories.
I bet they had good stories.
Great, great stories. What else?
Did you have any encounters with animals that was?
Not me personally, mm-hmm. but okay, well, you can't see our lane from our place, the way it's grown up, but it comes off the Norfolk Road,
mm-hmm.
and it goes a ways, and then it splits. It'll go to that middle house, and then on up to our house. From our cabin all the way down to the road, it was about a fourth of a mile. We had a Chesapeake Bay Retriever at the time, and Joanne was coming down to put letters in the mailbox and so forth. She'd bring it, but he was always on a leash.
Mm-hmm.
And she's walking halfway down where the lanes divide, and she looks up, and about 20 or 25 feet in front of her, there's an adult grizzly eating grass. The wind had to have been in the wrong direction because he didn't smell her.
Mm-hmm.
But then he looked up and he reared up. Well, she was so excited, that was over with. She had to run up and tell me, oh, she was a diehard animal lover. And she would tell me, she says, the only thing I could think of was, oh, you beautiful thing, you. And he turned around, walked off.
Great.
I have to tell you a little bit more about what you're going to see on the tape.
On the tape of Tom Reynolds.
Every time we would meet anywhere, our house, the border, or anywhere, we'd eat and then start quizzing, enjoying, recording. What you have is, I tried to get some sort of a chronological way of keeping it the way he lived.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's maybe a minute you'll see in the customs building. The next minute, you don't know, oh, it's in our house, and back and forth, right. Stuff like that, just to keep it going right.
Mm-hmm.
I watched it again a while ago this morning, and one thing that I should have ended it differently, with a different story. I don't know if you've heard this or not. Tom couldn't have lived up here without Becky.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard that?
I knew she dropped in on him a lot.
Now, yeah. Don and Sue took excellent care of him, but at that time, I understand now they live somewhere around here year-round. Mm-hmm. But at that time, their winters were back in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
They would send him things, like I remember once they mailed him a big new blanket. They mailed it to John Frederick, and with John then took it up to him. Winters were with us in Columbia Falls. Joanne would make a giant bowl of potato soup. And she'd take a big jar, fill it, close it, give it to Becky at the post office the next morning. She'd take it up to Tom.
Mm-hmm.
At first, Tom would meet Becky down at the road most of the time. And he was always getting a lot of stuff. If it was too much for him to carry, she would take half the load and walk up and come back to her truck then. Then when he got too sick, if there was anything heavy, she just would automatically say, I'll take it up for you. It's going. Have you heard the story about how he died or anything?
No, tell the story.
This is the way it was twice a week for the mail. I don't remember the days now.
Mm-hmm.
But one day she went up, and now whether she didn't see him down at the road, or either maybe she'd been going up to his place, that I don't know, but at least walking, because it's wintertime. But on this one day, he's not down, so she walks up with his mail,
mm-hmm.
and she opened the door, and the minute she opened the door, it was cold. There's no heat in there.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, something's wrong. And she could hear him breathing, heavily breathing in his bed, in his bedroom. And she walked back, you know, and she was cradling him into her arms, and he died in her arms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we all say he was waiting for his Becky.
Yeah.
Before he died.
Yeah.
And she read a scripture over him. Then she finished and went down to Polebridge, called it in. And Lynn was one of the people that went up then to bring him down and mm-hmm. down to the valley.
Mm-hmm. That's a good story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
His best friend was Joe Bush. They got my first day on the border. I got there, and the area guy was there to teach me what's in all of here. Joe Bush is waiting on the other side to get over. And, well, I don't know who he is, but the area director, he says, that's Joe Bush, he lives, blah, 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 blah. And so when it's 9 o'clock, I open the gate, and Joe drives under the canopy. I says, hello, Joe, I'm Joe. Do you play crib? But Becky, in those days when Joe was open, Becky would go up and to Joe's place, and he would have lunch with him. Uh-huh. And then some days she would pick Tom up, and Tom and Becky would go up.
That's great.
And have lunch with Joe, and then they'd come back. Well, Joe used to get Playboy magazine, and after he was through, he'd give it to Tom. I could tell the way that when they, Becky and Tom was coming back, and I'd go outside, Tom was trying to hide his Playboy. You know? And let's see, this is on the tape, this part here. They were all, for years and years, you know, it was just them. And when Joe died, they scattered his ashes up on some hill on this certain day. A lot of people were there and all. Mm-hmm. When Tom heard that he died and we're going to have the little ceremony, he was saying, "Oh, best thing you can do is just pour a can of beer over his ashes." So when Joanne went to pick him up, he's walking out with a six-pack of beer. And they went up, and the talks, and everybody had a free hand to say what they wanted and all. And when it got to Tom, he just went out, and can by can, he poured over Tom's ashes. And as Joanne was telling me later, he says, people are getting a little shook seeing that, you know. Uh-huh. Yeah. But then you'll see in his tape, he's always, he's got a shirt on. His top button is always buttoned. Mm-hmm. I don't think I ever saw him in a tie. I don't know. Maybe because we had his birthday parties up on at the border. But I don't remember that. But you know, when you know how the Norfolk people are, and they don't dress up to go to something like that.
It's just
'cause nobody does up here. But Tom noticed it because after it was over with, and they were down at Joe's restaurant and everybody eating and all, and Tom was sitting next to Joanne, and he said, "You know, if I was to come to something like this, dressed like these people are, they'd say, this old man doesn't know how to take care of himself."
So what was Joe Bush like?
Let's see, I've heard his real name, but that wasn't really his name. Joe Bush means, it was Joe whatever, he's out in the bush.
Oh.
That wasn't his real name, and it just turned out to be Joe Bush. He was he was a nice guy, but he was strange still. Like, after duty hours, he says, "Come up and have a beer." So we go up, and we thought he's giving us a beer, and he charges us for it. Stuff like that. He had a daughter that after he died, she was taken over. She was nice. Joe had special permission when the gates were closed for the season. He had approval to keep his car, say, over on the U.S. side, mm-hmm. and drive down to do his shopping and whatever. But he was supposed to always telephone, "Okay, I'm down," and so forth. Mm-hmm. Sometimes he'd call, he said, sometimes he wouldn't. He would always go back drinking too much. Mm-hmm. One time, he parks his car and he walks on the other side of the border, and oh, his dog is out. He didn't know he'd left his dog out. He goes inside, opens the door. His dog is inside. He don't know what animal is following him around there.
Uh-oh.
So he's crazy like that. I have heard, and I don't know if it's true or not, I have heard that, okay, back in those days, you know, the wolf was an endangered species. Mm-hmm. The story that someone told me was someone on the U.S. side has killed a wolf and talked Joe into taking blame for it because Joe's on, not an American and all that stuff. I don't know if it's true or not. Let's see.
How about some of the other characters of the North Fork?
Let's see. Well, you know, there's a lot more people here than now. In fact, I'm surprised at the number of lanes and all. Mm-hmm. I go to you all on your TV, you Google up, you know, and pictures, I don't recognize anybody. All those names, Lord, they're strangers to me. Mm-hmm. But in those days, let's see, Well, let's see. Barbara Lawrence. Do you know Barbara Lawrence?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Does she still have property up here?
No.
Yeah. She was a little strange in some ways. Let's see. Maggie loved horses.
Uh-huh.
She was crazy about horses. And Barbara once told her, well, come on down, ride our horses, you know. And Maggie went down. She put her to work cleaning her house.
She never got to ride the horses?
We finally bought her a horse. Becky the Melgale was a horse rider, too. Yeah. And we bought one from Maggie. And Becky would trailer hers up, and then the two of them would go out roaming all over and so forth.
Oh, that's great.
Elmer, you know Elmer?
Elmer, yes.
I've heard how sick he is right now. In fact, Bonnie was telling me, I think I understood it right, that it's doubtful that this time next year he'll still be here.
Really?
Wow. He was... Well, everything Maggie found out about horses and what to do and how to do it and all, it came from Elmer. Elmer was a great, great guy. There was another guy, he was one of the carpenters up here that would build houses, not Ray. But I can't think of his name. But he had relations back in Omaha. They owned a bakery. And he would come up. Just seemed like always when it was time to eat. But he wouldn't eat with us. And he said, okay, you don't feel right eating, talking to somebody.
Yeah.
But he was always at me, just sitting there, and he would talk so slow. And, yeah.
So what kind of changes have you seen in the North Fork?
The road is a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be wider.
Mm-hmm.
My son Steve, this is the first time he's been up here in 25 years, and his comment was, oh Lord, this road. I said, this is a good road.
Yeah.
It's really the same. I'm not thinking of the people and all.
Mm-hmm.
Now you see more lanes, as I just said, but the views are still as beautiful as they were back then. The weather is basically the same as it was. The weather. Now, I thought we had bad weather in Omaha. And when we came up for year-round, closed the border, and we're down in Columbia Falls for the winter. December and the first 2 weeks of January, 6 weeks, 72 inches of snow.
Wow.
God, I've never seen it was snowing all my life.
And that was in Columbia Falls, not up here, right?
Yeah. So I don't know what they had up here.
Yeah.
We would come up, we were good friends with the Regals, which is the next place down. Because they were from Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Not initially, but for years and years. He retired from St. Petersburg area. Yeah. And we would come up and have dinner. Say if it was a nice day, snow was on the ground and all, but there's nothing anticipated for the next 24 hours, and we come up and spend the day with them. There was the retired postmaster down in Columbia Falls, Ted and Marion, Andrew, And they were, that's, we met them through the Regals, because they got to be good friends. Mm-hmm. And we were the three couples that were always doing things together in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm. So how many years were you up here year-round in the North Fork? Did you stay over during the winter?
Let's see, Joanne retired in 92, and we returned to Omaha in 97.
Okay.
91 to 97.
Okay, yeah.
And I was the one to talk her into going back. She did not want to leave this place. She loved this place. Uh-huh. And I wanted to get back next to the grandkids, the kids, and so forth. Uh-huh. And she says, finally, when she consented, she says, only under one condition. I says, what's that? She says, I don't want to go down there and sit and die. She says, I just want to travel. Mm-hmm. Well, we traveled.
Great.
We traveled. Good example. We were on the outskirts of Vancouver, British Columbia. About 6 weeks later, we'd be down in Homestead National Park in South Florida.
Uh-huh. So what's it like for you coming back to the North Fork after all these years?
Regretting that I left.
Uh-huh. Regretting
that. Regretting it. Yeah. The best years of our lives were in the North Fork.
Oh. Yeah.
Now, I don't know how it is now, but back then, for the landowners, you were two groups. You were kind of divided, and there's a little debate going on, and like, well, I was talking to Larry the other day, and he was saying, like, oh, I said, I miss Joanne and her debates. But he says, you know, he said, we were still friends.
Yeah.
So I don't miss that, because I like to be friends with everybody, you know, and enjoy everybody. But I miss this place. I have, oh, Lord, my VCR camera was everywhere for all those years. And I've got that once I got down there, you need things to do. And I've converted it all and put on DVDs or CDs. Mm-hmm. And I can sit back and I can enjoy those years all over again. And I do that quite frequently.
That's great. That's really good. Well, I think we've about covered most of everything. Thank mm-hmm. you so much for this time. And on behalf of the North Fork Landowners Association and the North Fork History Project, thank you.
I've got something. Oh.